Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Open your hearts, loosen your butts. It's time for couples therapy.
Yeah, this podcast is Andy and Naomi's, where they can both laugh and hang with all their homies, talking excellent vacationing with brunches and cuddling, to messy situationships and conscious and coupling, from Netflix hookups to single them with some Hulu, text, sex, regrets, or feeling on your new Jubu. They gon' talk about it, yeah, you are invited, needing therapy, I guarantee, baby, we got it.
It's couples therapy, couples therapy.
Everyone, and welcome to Couples Therapy. My name is Andy.
My name is Naomi.
We're a real life couple, a real life couple of comedians. And on Couples Therapy, we answer a couple different questions. Did I steal your line?
You did, but keep going, sis.
No, you finish it. A couple different questions from
a couple different listeners.
We started laughing, and I immediately lost
you lost it.
The thread.
It's okay. I said this is a fun little turn. Shaking it up, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Let the listener know we're really bringing it fresh.
Yeah, this is not it's not just a recorded pre-recorded thing
on.
That
you
I just deploy at the top of every episode.
No. Where are we at?
We're present. We're here.
We are. We just finished recording an episode that you will hear in the future, but in a way that's good because I feel like I have that energy, you know, from that recording.
Mm-hmm.
What is it to be at a microphone? What is it to show up
for someone? Is present.
The artist is present.
The artist is present. You always know that when you listen to Couples Therapy, trademark.
The artist is present.
Actually, copyright, not trademark, correct?
Andy, I don't know.
Hold on, let me call our lawyer. Beep, boop, boop, beep, boop. Now you're staring at me. I believe there's something you want to bring to the table, Naomi.
Well, I just wanted to talk about the change in our dynamics in the household.
Go on.
Because, you know, as anyone who listens to this show knows, you know, we are the parents of lovely animals, mm-hmm. both of whom are in remission from their cancer. Okay? We go to the vet a lot. Our children are doing their best. They're thriving. We love them.
There was a point a couple weeks ago where it was literally like three vet appointments in 4 days.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Three vet appointments in 4 days, which is why you got to be part of the Patreon. But we went and but lately and I would say this is going on for months now, but I think it's just really just taken a turn where, you know, as I said, you know, we own these animals, but it seems actually, Andy, that you might be the pet.
Yeah, I said this the other day.
And I just think that it is, you've never been more accurate, and I think we've got to unpack it, and I want to know how you're feeling about that.
So Prembly sadly passed away last year, and I think it took a while for Squee to kind of figure out what happened.
Yeah.
And he's been grieving since.
Yeah.
Okay, so there was some point where I started sleeping out on the couch with him, because what would happen is, well, I mean, this happens a lot for Mabel's night walk, so around 11 p.m. or so. It changes every day, folks. So if you're someone watching the house waiting for me to leave,
it's not always 11.
It's
okay,
not always 11.
So
all right,
stake out another joint.
Yeah. So we're not on.
Yeah, you don't.
We don't have
to
children.
Here,
we're not
me.
On a schedule. All right. So anyway, when I take Mabel out for her night walk, Squee will go to the door and meow until either I get back or Naomi comes out
and picks him up and like walks him around. He
like
basically just like Andy's left and he's like very upset.
Yeah. So he would stand outside. We can't let him in the bedroom because all he does is knock things down and run around all
night. Well, this is what we're saying. It's like, I would be happy if he wanted to lay on the bed and sleep, but that's not what my son wants to do. Okay. The nighttime is the right time for Squee to get up into some mischief.
Yes.
So he's up and at him. He said, can I knock this over?
So we can't bring him in the bedroom with us, but what he'll do then is that he'll just sit outside and meow.
Yeah.
So I started sleeping on the couch with him. And then there will be times, like every couple hours, where he decides to wake me up because he wants my attention.
He's bored.
He wants, and so he'll come, he'll like touch me on the lip with his paw. He wakes me up, and then he wants me to move so that I'm on my back so he can sit on my chest. And that's his thing. And I realized that this is a lot of, like, when we will wake him up because we want something from him. Either we want to pet him.
Well, literally, that's it. I mean, I don't want much more from him.
Or we have to medicate him or something that's like that. True. So there's a lot of times, I mean, at least once a day, right, where we have to get him from where
pick him up from his beautiful
sleeping.
Slumber. He's curled up, and I say, "Squee, you got to get up, baby girl. We got to go. We got to give you a little syringe."
And he learned this behavior from us. So he thinks of us in some way as a pet, right? Yeah. I am Squee's pet.
Yeah, he goes, "I'm bored. It's 4 a.m. Wake up so I can lay on you and pet you the same way you be waking me up in the night." And it's like, you know, fair enough. He said, because Squee thought, well, this is the rule. The rule is whoever's sleeping has the right to be woken up by whoever is awake.
Yeah.
He was like, isn't this how we do it?
These days, like a medieval smithy, right? Do you remember?
Go on. Tell me about how a medieval smithy sleeps.
There was an article a couple years ago that was basically like, hey, in medieval times, they slept a lot differently from us.
Oh, yes.
They would go to bed at like 8 p.m., sleep until midnight, get up for a couple hours and do chores and, you know, have sex or whatever. And then that's what it was. It was just like, it was something like, well, they can't do it with the kids because they were all in the same house, in the same room or something like that. So they can't do it with the kids around. Do chores, though, and then go back to bed a couple hours later and sleep another 3 or 4 hours, right? Mm-hmm. So basically, Squee wakes me up, I pet him, and play Candy Crush Soda and watch Black Clover for an hour.
Okay, absolutely. So
those are my medieval chores. And then go back to bed. But yeah, basically, Squee calls the shots these days.
Yeah.
And I feel so bad for him. Because you can't, this is the thing, like, when we give him his medicine, he hates it. And you can't tell them. They don't understand that we're doing this for their own good. They just think we're just like shoving some like liquid in their mouths.
But it's like it happens. It's been happening every single day for almost a year. And I just don't understand why he doesn't realize that if he would just accept it would happen a lot faster. I'm like, Squee, this is really a 90-second process if you would just get on board. And you would just think, you know, they say animals, you know, remember patterns. And I'm like, well, why aren't you remembering the part of the pattern where if you just let me roll you up like a burrito, we can get this done in under 2 minutes?
No, but that, you know what? I appreciate Squee. Squee should be all of our mascots. He should be the mascot for humanity.
Because he won't go down without a fight.
He won't resist. He will not go down without a fight. Yeah. He resists.
He's a resister.
He resists.
Yeah. He resists. He persists. He says, "You will not take me."
Yes.
He says, "Not on my watch."
Yes.
You know what? You're right. Honestly, Squee for president. Because Squee really said, because, you know, a lot of other people would have said, well, I have small cell lymphoma.
Gastrointestinal lymphoma.
I'm not going to try anymore. No. Squee says every day.
Every day.
Not me.
Still cleaning himself.
Clean as a whistle, my boy. Okay? My boy's doing 17 years young. Surviving. Fighting, resisting.
Naomi, I want to bring something up, by the way, besides Squee.
Okay. I don't know what else there is to talk about. He just came on the table, too, because he can hear what you're talking about.
I have two things written down. Because do you remember in Leland's episode, someone called him with a device question, and they're like, oh, I host a Star Trek podcast.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I was trying to figure out something in the advice to link to Star Trek. And I'm like, I said, I don't really know much about Star Trek. And then I made a Star Trek reference. And then last week's episode, I made with Emily, I made another reference to Data.
Sure.
I felt like I needed to address this.
Okay, wow. Okay.
I have seen Star Trek The Next Generation, and that's basically it.
Yes. Okay.
And I felt like it was a little disingenuous of me to be like, I don't know nothing about it.
Yeah, it was.
By the way, in season 6, episode 7, when Worf does this thing, I felt like I was like, I'm not a nerd.
Yeah.
But definitely. I really do not know much about Star Trek except for The Next Generation.
Okay.
And I guess technically Picard, the sequel.
Okay. You know.
And sure, have I seen a couple seasons of Discovery? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you have. Yeah, you have.
Yeah. Is Is the one that Ron D. Moore, that where he was a writer on it, is that in my queue to watch at some point? Yes,
yes,
it,
yes
is.
It is. Yes, it is.
Yes, with that Odo guy, I don't know.
He doesn't know. The way he keeps saying he doesn't know when he clearly knows is
do
just
I know
so funny.
That Spock being a horny is called Ponfar. Do I know that? Yes, I do.
Wow. Wow. You know more than you think, and I think, you know, it sounds like you're getting closer to acceptance, but you're still resisting.
Uh-huh.
You know? And you're not resisting in the cool, active, political squee way. You're resisting in a, like, a denial kind of way, and I think you just need to get... You need to get quiet, you need to meditate on it, and you need to just, like, come into acceptance of who you are.
But it's really, it truly is one of those things that where I really don't know.
Andrew, please. It's like, literally, the lady don't protest too much. And I think the more
I really
you do,
don't
like,
know.
The worse it is.
Scott Bakula, yes. Was he the captain for Star Trek Enterprise? Sure. Do I know that? Yes.
Well, Andy, thank you for addressing this in such an open way.
David, do you want to read? We got a comment on Instagram from someone, and I thought it was very funny.
Okay, absolutely. Someone wrote, I'm catching up on episodes, and I'm on the Just Tom app. Andy saying, quote, my fingers are tender-headed. Made me truly laugh out loud. Pause the show and call my husband, because he's had me take out his braids before, and tell him that's my new phrase. So, so funny. Andy, your fingers are tender-headed. Andy had to take out a couple braids to me earlier this week,
yeah.
And they weren't even small braids. I just had some cornrows, and I just couldn't reach one part. I said, Andy, I need you to just, like, start this with me. And it was so funny, because I was like, just unfurl it. But I knew I shouldn't stress him. And I was like, Andy, can you... I, like, literally have to come in and be calm and be like, Andy, do you have the capacity to take this braid out for me just to start it? Because I'm having trouble.
Yeah.
And you're like, yes. And then, like, Andy literally is like, stop what he's doing, turn to him. He's like, what do I do again? How do I do it exactly? Tell me what. And I was like, you've got this. It's okay.
Yeah. It's like the time that Tawny's character on Lower Decks got Jack Quaid's character to take out her braids.
He knows.
Now,
so
I don't know much
about.
I don't know anything about Star Trek. I don't know that much.
This bitch bringing up the animated version. Okay. He done talked about every iteration of this, but. Animated. He said, Tawny, 1B hair. Lord have mercy. Okay, well, before we get to our perfect, perfect guest, I gotta plug myself again.
Yeah, please do.
Which, at this point, looks like my first show in months. May 8th, I will be performing at Dynasty Typewriter as part of the Netflix is a Joke Festival. Your girl's in the fest. My love, my fave, Aparna Nancherla will be opening for me. That is Wednesday, May 8th, 10 p.m. at Dynasty Typewriter. Yes, it's 10 p.m. It's a pajama jammy jam. Wear your PJs, masks required. We're going to cozy up, cover up, and talk it out. It should be a very good time. I'll be working on some stuff. It'll just be very like a loosey-goosey work in progress. And I promise you will be in bed by midnight. I mean, honestly, 11:30, depending on how close you live. Okay? Okay? Because I don't want you guys out in these streets at all hours.
Honestly, driving in LA at that time
That's
is
true.
A breeze.
I know. I have a friend who's coming. The wonderful Jillian Soprano's coming. And she lives like an hour away. But she said late at night. It'll be easy.
Who did all the signage for our wedding, and it was wonderful.
Yes. Stationery designer, artiste, Jillian will be there. She said she bought new pajamas. And I said, okay, I got to step up my game. I'm trying to find something. I was looking at Petite Plume, and they seem to be like high-end pajamas.
Okay.
But just like regular looking. Like, I kind of am like, should I go for like a fun pattern? I just don't know, guys. And, you know, the clock's ticking, so I really got to make a choice, pick some PJs.
You should hire a stylist to buy you pajamas.
Yes, I should. I really should. But then I was also like, what if I just did the TLC Creep video where they were just in silk pajamas with like sports bras? And I said, that's a vibe. Anyway,
aren't you going to do a warm-up show on the Patreon?
Yes,
for
honey,
people?
For my real ones, for the CTQC Inner Circle Vibes, Saturday, April 28th, 3 p.m. Pacific. Meet me at the Zoom screen, okay? And now, in order to do that, you got to be part of the Patreon. So you got to go to patreon.com/couplestherapypod. join the community. Then you get a link. And we just going to be doing it. And I think with the page too, I might even just be like, you want to give me suggestions? You want to talk it out? Like, we may really workshop it as a team, as a family, as a unit. That's what we may have to do. So that'll be really fun. And that is, again, April 28th, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. And that'll be like 30 to 45 minutes. And again, like a workshop, a family affair, get together, okay? And that's just for us. That's a safe space for all of us to be ourselves. Now, speaking of safe spaces, being ourselves, I think we need to get to today's guest.
This was really good.
This was such a fun one. This is someone who
we didn't know.
We just met for the first time. I mean, knew their work, knew of them, but this was the first time to talk, and I was like, okay, I'm obsessed with you. Besties?
I watched the show they're on.
Oh, well, of course. Look, you've already heard her dulcet tones, okay? And they are dulcet because the girl's got chops and vocals. The one, the only, Ali Maki. Ali is an actor. You have seen her on Hacks, Dear White People, Cloak and Dagger. She is on the Big Door Prize on Apple TV Plus.
That's the one I watch.
The new season premieres tomorrow. If you're listening to this episode the day it drops, April 24th, new season, season two of the Big Door Prize.
I tried to ask her what the blue stuff was. She wouldn't tell me.
Yeah, you can't get any.
Craig won't tell me. Our friend Craig writes on the show. He won't tell me.
We're trying to get the tea. The show is so good, so fun. There is a mystery, honey. There's a mystery. We have to crack a code. Ali also stars in the movie Shortcomings.
Yes.
That we liked. And I had so many thoughts.
That was great.
It's funny. It's like when you meet a person where it's like, I have so many things to tell you because I have so many thoughts about your work. But then it's like, we don't have time for all that. So it was at the end where I was like, I got to talk to you about Shortcomings because I don't even know if your character did what was right. Like, I was so anyway.
Did we do that on mic?
I don't know if that was on mic or after. But I was like, the point is everyone has to go watch Shortcomings, okay, so we can all talk about it because I have so many thoughts about it. Anyway, I think without further ado, after you have set your Apple TV Plus to Big Door Prize Season 2, strap in for the one, the only, Ali Maki.
Roll it. By the way, I'm going to put this out there. If I'm sluggish, I had way too many vegan sandwiches for dinner last night. And spent half the night lying.
I can't believe you would tell this to company.
With indigestion.
I can't believe you would tell this to company.
So if I am sluggish, I want to put that out there. I just need the world, not just Allie, but the world to know where I am.
Yeah.
Both emotionally and gastrointestinally.
Oh, good Lord. Pivot.
Totally.
Allie, how are you today?
Well, I feel you on the sluggishness. I tried a new sleeping aid last night.
Okay, what were you doing?
And that's never a good idea.
Unisom. Okay, yes, we've heard of her. What is she doing for you?
Not great things. Like, I am so groggy.
Yeah.
But I only took a quarter of the pill.
Yeah, of course.
Because I'm so sensitive. If I take like a baby aspirin, I'm good all day. Or if I one time took a kids Dramamine and I literally, no joke, fell asleep for 48 hours.
No.
No, I'm not even joking. You literally could ask Colton because he was there and he was like, are you dead or alive?
Oh,
so yeah, we're here. We're all groggy.
Yeah.
Look, you're talking to the house that sleep disorders built.
Exactly.
So
that's why I asked you. Yeah.
Everything. Melatonin.
Yeah, we did Advil two melatonins. PM. What did we say before bed? May the melatonin take you?
Yes.
I believe was what we said to each other instead of good night. It was may the melatonin take you.
Yes.
I love
very
that.
Very Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Wait, have you ever done a sleep study?
No.
Yes, I did it because they thought I had sleep apnea, which I do not, but I'm not convinced that's real. I think I do have sleep apnea, but it's so cool. They pull these wires and then you go to this weird room and you have to sleep there. And then, I recommend it for a Friday night.
Here's my question. Were you able to sleep in the weird room? Because my theory is that like if you take me out of all of the things that I've constructed to try to sleep.
Right.
I probably wouldn't sleep, but are they doing anything? Like, is the room like a perfect temperature? Like, what's the vibe of the room?
No, it's not even a room. It's like a scary building, and then you walk in, there's just a bed. So I am convinced that it's not a controlled experiment. So these results, like, you know, go to a random motel and try to sleep. Yeah. You're not going to get accurate results.
Right.
So, you know, I may have to do another one. At some point, hire
a scientist to come to your place.
That's what I'm saying.
That's the only way it's going to happen.
Up to the electrode.
Right?
Yeah, and he just sits in a chair in the corner and watches
smoking.
Me sleep.
Like, yeah, watching you sleep. That's restful, right?
He touches my face every so often. Oh, yes.
Oh, my Allie, goodness. Can I ask you something? Look, if you are sick of talking about this kind of stuff, just because I read in your Wikipedia article earlier this morning.
The most trustworthy place.
Exactly.
Well, it said at 14, you went to like the equivalent of a TikTok house in the early 2000s or whatever. I forget what they called it, but that's what I'm calling it.
Yeah, that is a true story.
And that seems disruptive to me. I don't like
disruptive.
Well, I'm just curious. Like at 14, that's like prime. Like I'm finding out who I am time. And it seems weirdly disruptive to then go to basically like the early 2000s version of a TikTok house to hang out with, I don't know, musicians or whoever.
Yes, highly disruptive. I'm always shocked that I'm still sane, that I'm mildly sane, and I'm still in this business and still pursuing it. Yeah. Because it is, when I look back on it, I'm just think that's insane. Mm-hmm. But I guess when you're 14, you're just kind of like, I mean, on day one, the manager that I was living with was like, I mean, this is what's called being adult. Like, you know, she kind of formulated in your mind that this is normal. This is what it is to be an adult. And I was very naive. You know, I didn't even know what sex was or kiss. I didn't know anything about anything. And I just came to this house. So basically when I was 13 and a half, I had done musical theater all growing up and I loved to sing and dance and all this junk. And I signed up for this. My mom found this acting class and it was this super shady manager that toured the country looking for kids to scout. Uh-huh. And so you take this workshop and then, you know, she was like, wow, you're the one, you know, you got to come out to LA and it was marketed as this like summer boot camp, right? Mm-hmm. So I was only supposed to go for 3 weeks in the summer, just like a fun experience. And I never came back. I'm still here.
Wait, what?
I'm still here in my 30s.
None of this is in your Wikipedia article. I was just like.
Well, you'll have to add it now.
Wait a minute.
Sorry.
What I'm imagining, I'm like, what you say, like, I didn't know kissing, I didn't know sex. I'm thinking a delicate angel baby. Okay, I don't want you going into the belly of the beast. I don't want you in there.
Wait, can we hold on? I want to go okay, mom signed you. Are your parents together or divorced? What's going on?
They were divorced, but they were both very supportive of my acting dreams. I think because I was so shy, like I would not speak to anyone as a kid. And then my mom put me in all these activities. And then when I would go on stage, I'd just be like, ha ha ha, like tap dancing and be all crazy. And they're like, who is this child? So I think for them, it was just such a positive thing. And I'm just so driven. I'm a freaking Capricorn and a tiger. So by the way, if you've not looked at primal astrology, it's my new obsession. It's mixing.
No, Allie, I will not support this. I will not. I will not support primal astrology. We're not astrologers. You said primal. I said, you can tell me about it, but I will not concur.
Adjective nor the noun in that. But we are supportive of you. I just want you to know that.
If it's feeding your soul, I'm happy for you.
100% supportive.
But
I
will not take a bite of that meal for your soul.
I feel it.
So tell us. Wait, tell us about the primal.
Yeah, no, tell us what it's telling you.
You want to know about it? Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So it's like I'm a Capricorn, and then in the Chinese astrology, I'm a tiger.
Sure.
And then if you look it up, you get a new animal.
Oh, so combining both of those.
What? Hold on. This is like some anime shit. This is some like, this is like, okay, we fought this guy. Now we're like at a standstill and now we have to do this next push to this and we get a new power. Do you know what I mean? Astrology wasn't doing it. And now, I'm watching Black Clover right now, okay? And it's just one of those, and I'm not watching it. It's on while I'm playing Candy Crush at 4 a.m. and trying to get back to sleep because I ate too many vegan sandwiches for dinner, okay? And basically, it's just one of those fighting animes. There's no real plot.
Yeah, it's just
like,
each episode's
it's just
a different
like 10
fight.
Episodes of people fighting each other. It's like, okay, fine. You know, so it's not, it's just there so that I don't start thinking about anxieties, right? It's just every, as many distractions as possible so that I could just get at least 2 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
But what happens is they fight And then they fight to a standstill usually, right?
Yes, of course.
And then one of the characters digs down deep and summons up a new power.
A new power.
And the new power is primal astrology, right? So you were Capricorn and Capricorn was doing it for you for a while. And you're like, yeah, this is like, I'm reading my horoscope and it's like, this is helping me and this is like orienting me in a certain way. And then at some point,
you hit a wall.
It ran out of juice for you, and you're like, this isn't doing it anymore.
I got
it. Now I'm digging down deep and summoning up this new animal, this new power, this primal astrology. What is your, is it just, what is a Capricorn? I don't know what the thing is with the,
they're the goat. Like they're a goat.
Okay. So it's a goat tiger, is what you're saying. This is the new, it's a hybrid. It's a chimera. Chimera.
Well, the actual animal that it is. By the way, I didn't make any of this up. I'm not the spokesperson.
No, I understand. No, we know. Yes. You're just our conduit. You're just our conduit in this.
I found this on Google, you know, so it's not really real. I don't even know. My new animal is a Komodo dragon.
What? So goat plus tiger equals Komodo dragon?
Who would have thought?
Wow.
Yeah. Listen, y'all got to look it up just so you know.
I'm going to look it up.
Okay, so let's go back. Now, parents divorced, you're doing musical theater. What's your big one? What Sweeney Todd, what's your favorite?
What's your favorite musical?
Guys and Dolls.
That I was in?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I heard you. It's funny because I was listening to an episode and you talked about Brigadoon and I was in Brigadoon.
You were?
Of course. I was in Brigadoon. Of course. I tap danced in Brigadoon. I don't know if there's tap dancing in Brigadoon, but I did.
But you did it.
You brought the choreography to the director and you're like, I'm doing this.
Oh, absolutely. I love tap dancing. Well, my first musical I ever did was called The Magical Story Circus. Cute. And I was 7 years old and I got cast to play the leading role, which was, you know, I think that was also like my mom was, wow, this is amazing. Yeah. And her name was just Asian Princess and she was the leading role.
Jesus.
Okay, maybe this is how this will lead into something about love and therapy.
This really might, because leading, but also nameless. Do you know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
In charge, but also Asian princess generally.
Generally. And, also, I'm 7 or maybe 8 at the time, right? So I'm very young and, again, so naive. And so they put me in this kind of, like, Asian garb. Like I say Asian only because it wasn't specific to anything.
Just generalized.
And of course it's just general across China and Laos and Japan. Nothing specific about any country, let alone like smaller, like whether we're talking about like a city or something like that. Just all the same. Okay.
All of it. Just a little of this, a little of that. And so there was also the character of the Asian prince.
Uh-huh.
Now, the Asian prince was a white boy who was also maybe like 9, 10, maybe. And so they also put him in the Asian garb, right?
I'm sorry. Is this for a school? Is this a school play?
It was like an outside of school program.
Outside of school?
Outside of school. I'll
I'm like, y'all can't see me. Listener, I am gobsmacked. I am shaken. I am stirred.
Well, this is like because when I played the lead in Merchant of Venice as Jew. Do you remember that?
No.
Why
you would have kids do that. Because I'm like, it's already hard enough to do anything with kids, right? Like wrangling them and getting them, even the kids who like it and know what they're doing. It's just a lot of work. So I'm like, okay, this is not a school. You found these children. And now you're saying.
And they're under 10
exactly,
years old.
Asian prince and princess
in
generic, generalized Asian garb. This feels like it's just a recipe for like offending everybody.
100%. But this is what like early 2000 or maybe the 90s. And so. Also, the storyline is that they have to kiss each other.
Oh, no.
You're children.
I've never kissed anyone before. So now I'm supposed to have my first kiss on stage in front of my whole community.
Oh, no.
And with this boy dressed as an Asian prince. And I'm dressed as an Asian princess. Anyways, so convoluted. And so we're working our way up to rehearsals and all that. And I end up like putting my foot down and quitting the play the night before we open. And for me as like the ultimate people pleaser now and like just someone who is like, I don't want to, you know, like make anyone mad, that to me seems so crazy that I put my foot down like that.
Yeah.
And everyone, like the director, made this huge deal. And like my family, my mom was so disappointed. She's like, it's the leading role. And I was like, no, I can't do it. I can't go on stage and have my first kiss like this. Obviously, I didn't know anything about that it was problematic at the time. Yeah, but now looking back, I'm like, why did anyone save me from this situation?
Yes.
And so I let everyone down in the community. But now looking back, finally in my 30s, I'm like, you know what? Maybe that saved me from like just completely getting destroyed in this industry.
Yeah,
that's some Kyle MacLachlan on the set of Dune shit. He walked off for like 2 weeks.
Really?
They were fucking him over on his contract.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
For you to stand for yourself at the age of 8 is huge, and especially the night before.
At 8?
At 8, because it's like, I'm 40 and I can't do it now. I'd be like, well, I guess I'll just show up there and I'll pay my own way, and we'll just deal with the resentment on the other end. So at 8, it's really good that you could do that.
Exactly. Well, they end up, like, they had to find someone, so they used the TA. You know, and so that she was also a white girl. So then.
How old was she?
She was also a kid, but like an older kid.
Right.
But she had to step in the last minute.
Right.
So I have so these have pictures
two
of
white children in dressed
in like a kimono and a dashiki. They like had to just find something.
They just like found something. They were like, is this Asian? No, it's not. But it's color. It's color.
White, so just put it on her.
It's color.
I will send you the picture.
Please do, thank you.
It's like a beautiful black and white photo of the two of them on stage dressed as the Asian prince and princess. Because then they put me in the background. Like, they're like, okay, if you're not going to do it, then you're going to be a troop member. And so then now I was dressed as a buffalo behind them and I was chewing grass.
No.
Was this Breakfast at Tiffany's too?
What the hell was this play?
Yeah, right.
I am livid over whatever this play was.
It was my first play. So,
considering that was your first play, I'm really surprised you stuck with it at all.
Right.
Because one, you're like, okay, you're trying to make me do something I don't want to do. And then like when I put my foot down, it's like everyone's freaking out. And then your alternative is to chew grass in the back. And I'm just surprised you're here today as an actor.
Well, I think it just spoke to, I just truly love performing and make believe, because my mom did say I was the happiest I've ever been being the buffalo. Cause I got to do like a few, I'm like the troop member that shows up all over the place. So I got to
be utility player. You're really coming in there.
That's exactly right. So I was so much happier being the utility player.
Yeah, than having to kiss some random white boy, which, save your own life. You know, you got to save your own life. Wow, you're not random. I picked you and no one else.
Yeah. So wait, okay. So fast forward, though, to 14, going to the TikTok.
I'm going to call it a hype house, because I don't know what it is. You have to explain it to me. So it was supposed to be a three-week boot camp with this manager. And now, everyone in the house people that the manager has scouted?
Yes.
Okay.
So basically, it was like different kids come in, come out, like depending on pilot season or depending on, during pilot season, we're, the cool kid would come in, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed kid that books everything, and she would make the best room for him, And
Ryan Gosling.
Can you imagine if Ryan Gosling was there? But yeah, so there'd just be a bunch of different kids coming in, coming out. And so, yeah, when I went, I thought, oh my gosh, I'm moving to Hollywood and it's all going to be like how you think it is. And it was just this really horrible condo in Santa Clarita. And that was the hype house.
Not even Hollywood.
That's exactly what it is.
That is what LA is.
You think Hollywood is going to be the thing, you get off the bus and then someone discovers you at Schwab's. And really, it's a dirty condo in Santa Clarita.
Yeah, like I'm talking like green carpet, like all the way up and down the, bottom floor and the top floor. And, this is back before cell phones and stuff. Yeah. So everyone's always like, why didn't you tell your mom and everything? And I'm like, first of all, day one, they had the, this is life. So if you want to be an adult, like, welcome to life. So I'm already thinking like, oh, this is life. This is normal. And then also the way we communicated with our parents was there was like a big fax machine on the floor in the corner.
No.
And we get a calling card, or my mom will get me a calling card. And then I would like call her once a week and, just be like, yeah, everything's great. Like,
Right. With other people around, I imagine, too, right? Like, you're on a private phone call.
On the fax machine?
Well, you know fax machines have a phone.
On the fax machine, yeah.
I just imagine, like, you're calling your mom and she's just hearing, like...
I'm faxing her as help.
Okay, so, like, what are you doing during the day in this green carpeted condo in Santa Clarita? What is the schedule of the day? Is it supposed to be, like, dance classes, elocution? What are we doing?
All kinds of things. Because one of the things is, you know, our parents pay for the rent, which was to, you know, include food and all that, which, you know, not
questionable. And I bet it was just some Rice Krispies and a goddamn banana.
I'm telling you, I would hide rolls of saltines in my bunk bed just so I could, have something. You know what I mean?
Are you in prison?
Yes. Yes, she is. This is the next documentary. This is the next documentary. I can't. You hold hiding saltines under your bunk, making toilet wine.
Toilet wine. Yeah. So in the day, it was very like, so we did go to high school. Or I did go to high school. So we would take the bus and we go to school. The ones that, or
Santa Clarita High?
Hart High School.
Okay, so you just went to the local high school, but like, when you just got there for 3 weeks in the summer. This feels very random for you to just show up at a school.
Oh, well, okay, so that, the summer, sorry, that's fast forward to when I actually stayed past, because like I said, I never went back home.
Yes, I see. So you threw, okay, so, but it sounds like you stayed, it wasn't against your will. You chose to stay, because it really does have the makings of you being kidnapped a little bit.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. I was determined to stay. I mean,
okay.
Okay. I'm the Komodo dragon. I'm not going home. I'm going to fight to the finish.
Yes, absolutely.
And, I'm there. I'm going to stay because, you know, it's also fun and exciting too, because you're there with all these other kids and we're excited. So we're like, whatever, we have to clean the green carpet, you know, and we're like, this is kind of gross, but, you know, we're not going to go home. Because it was also, you know, I was getting an agent and I was actually going on real auditions.
Okay. So it's real auditions happening. Okay.
Real auditions happening. And I booked my first job, which was like a little co-star on That's So Raven. And, you know, in that
period. Peak. That's it. Yes. That's the time. You've arrived.
That is the time. I was doing extra work on the Bernie Mac show on Even Stevens and Lizzie McGuire. I was in the gym class.
That's the real deal. Absolutely. You were like, this is what I came here to do. This is me popping off.
100%. You're weighing it out and you're also thinking, you know, the adults in the room are saying this is all normal. So you're like, this is all normal, you know?
Right. How would you know any different? Right. By the way, the name of the documentary is Clean the Green Carpet.
That's the new documentary. Okay, Clean the Green Carpet.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You guys are the producers, and we're going to go deep undercover of that time period.
I will. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So we had acting classes and stuff, too. She had a school, and then we had to take the acting classes from that, too. Like, read this commercial, do this improv. And then all the other moms that were in town worked for her, too. And then the older kids drove the younger kids. You guys' faces are killing
me
right now.
I'm worried about you, and I just need to know, are you okay?
Yeah.
Are you okay? Like, were you okay?
The format of a cult.
It has an MLM vibe. It has a quiet on set vibe. And I just need to know that you were okay. And granted, you may not want to tell two strangers on a podcast, but I just need to know that, like, you were okay.
Absolutely. I feel really lucky. Again, like I said, nothing horrendous happened, and, you know, I feel very lucky that I had such a good upbringing. You know, I was already very shy and not like a risk taker in that way. So I very much stayed in my lane, but I'm very sensitive now about kids in acting and, you know, just that whole world, because it's like, I think a lot of times people don't know what they're signing up for.
Of course. Not at all.
Yeah.
And like, all you really know going in is that it's hard to break in, which actually just sets you up to be taken advantage of more, right? Because you know it's already tough, so that if you do get in, you're like, I'm going to do whatever I have to stay in here.
And that's how you feel as an adult.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, exactly. Let alone if you're like a 14 kid.
But
I'm going to use this, though, to pivot now. So, because this is now also the most insane way to be coming up as a teenager. You're living in a house with a bunch of kids who share your interests, but also, like, this is also its own motion picture, a bunch of, like, driven kids living in a house. It's like, it seems like it could be its own pressure cooker. are we having crushes? Are we dating? Are we meeting people? Because it seems to me like there's a lot going on. Because you're already like, I'm a businesswoman. You're like, I'm 14 and I have a plan.
So, I'm imagining a little briefcase and you open up and your sides are inside.
Sides and headshots. Sides and headshots.
Oh,
baby,
yes.
Maybe Allie is ready. Maybe Allie has maybe the headshot that has four different looks, maybe. You know, and like
100%, a comp card.
Yes.
Yes.
So you can show us and you're like Asian princess. One look. Look number two, Buffalo. Look number three, Nessa Raven. Look number four, even Stevens.
That's you got it. I lived at Kinko's. Like, I'm not even joking. I love paper. I used to love printing out the resumes.
Yes.
The hard headshot, the hard copy headshot.
Yes, like, that thick stock. That thick yes. stock.
Staple it together, stock. Back yes. to back.
Oh,
let's
God,
go.
I remember a staple.
Whether it's soup or a headshot, love that thick stock. All right.
Soup or a headshot. That's good, Andy. So now, what is it like? Crushing, dating, doing any of that. Is that happening in high school?
Yeah, it did. I mean, thankfully, I immediately found my gay best friend in the house.
Okay.
And I feel like that was very protective for me. And, you know, like, because I had that camaraderie, but it wasn't going to turn into anything else.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I feel like that was really nice. And I mean, weirdly, I also had like a little bit of a crush on him,
uh-huh,
you know,
sure,
just because
he was a safe boy. Yeah, you always yeah. have a crush on a safe boy.
A crush on a safe boy.
Like, it's true when you're younger where you're like, I know we're not. It was like, you're a boy and you're nice and you're safe to be around. So
yeah.
I think when you're younger, you automatically are like, is this love? Like, is this what it feels like to be around a person?
Totally. Yeah. Like, I would have gotten married. I was just like, oh my gosh, you're so talented. And he was in choir and he was so cool. So I definitely had and then, you know, he was older, so he would help drive me to auditions and stuff like that. So I don't know in terms, I mean, we were also young, so I'm trying to think. It was always weird because when we went to the high school.
Yeah.
Like, we were known as the kids in the house.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I'm wondering. This
no, that's the title.
The kids in the house.
The kids in the house.
No, that's what I'm imagining. Okay, yes, this is what I'm imagining. So, right, because I'm like, what is it when you're in the regular school system, but you're obviously coming from a very specific setting?
Yeah, so it was interesting because we were the kids in the house, but then at this high school, it was renowned for their show choir. Like, the show choir there is the top in the nation or whatever. And so my dream was to be in the show choir. But weirdly, because we were the kids in the house, I felt like the show choir kids were like, you're the kids in the house. Like, this is real deal show choir. Like,
oh.
I felt like there was sort of this, well, we didn't really fit in with the show choir kids, but I made it my mission to be in the show choir.
Yeah.
To infiltrate the... I never quite got accepted by the show choir kids. I was like the musical theater kid that never got accepted by the musical theater kids.
Oh, no.
They're like, no, you're the kid in the house. Like, go away.
Oh, my God.
Right. You're like, you're going to be on Disney Plus. We're going to go to the championships in Washington,
yeah.
D.C.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's very, like, upstairs, downstairs, very kind yes. of like, yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like slobs versus snobs. This is your Caddyshack, right? This is your, like, you cannot be in the show choir. Right.
Yeah, professionals in show choir. We're professionals. We know how to project. And you're playing for the camera.
We have perfect pitch.
Yeah.
Exactly.
They, like, want. Yeah, they're going to be that
you were
shit.
In Brigadoon.
Yeah, yeah. You tapped. Danced in Brigadoon, like, let's be real. So yeah, I felt like, and also I get it because they want people who are committed, and if you're in this side of the business, you're not committed, because if you have an audition at 3 p.m. in Santa Monica,
right.
you're gonna go and
right.
you're not
we're
gonna go to practice
school. We're leaving Santa Clarita at 12 p.m. to get to Santa Monica by 3.
Yeah, sure.
100% we're stapling in the car.
We're ready.
Yeah.
That is headshot to resume, listeners. Headshot to resume.
That's what we're stapling. That's what we're stapling, you guys. So how long did you live in the carpeted condo in Santa Clarita?
Oh my gosh, I love this. Going to be like an hour just in depth about the condo.
I did not know we were going to get this because it's like usually we're like, okay, we talk for a little bit and then we'll do a question. But it's like, I have questions for you.
Well, to me,
I know this.
And you, Allie, you can tell me, but to me, this seems like an original kind of like everything.
A formative.
Formative. Everything. Yeah. I was going to say like original sin. I don't mean it like that, but I just mean like this is the like
formative moment.
Formative moment for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is therapeutic for me to talk about it. to be honest, to relive this. Okay, wait. What was the question?
I forget. How long were you in the condo? Like all through high school?
So I got there when I was 14, and I think I was around 17 when my mom finally moved out moved to California. Yeah. But the thing was, is I wasn't at the same house for the entire 3-4 years. Mm-hmm. So she had other moms that would set up other.
Other condos, extension condos, satellite campuses.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That, you know, to house more kids. So I would move around a little bit. I went to one in Burbank. I stayed there for a bit. And then I stayed at another one in Santa Clarita. So I moved around a little bit.
Is it scary? Because it's funny, because you talk about being a shy kid. Because I was a shy kid, too. And a lot of people who know me from when I was younger are like, cannot believe I do stand-up comedy, because I was definitely like the quiet kid in the corner.
Oh, you were?
Oh, yeah. And like, I would just read my Babysitter's Club books, and I was like, I don't, you guys were doing a lot. Like, I just feel like kids were scary to me. I was intimidated. And so what I'm wondering, too, is what it is to move from house to house, because bunk beds, right? So I'm assuming there's what, 2 to 4 of you in a room?
This is giving trafficking, by the way. The whole, the like shifting from house to house. That's.
I know.
But like, each house is this. Because here's also another thing I'm imagining too. Because I think for me too, I always wanted to be an actor when I was younger, but I was afraid of. One, I had a lot of insecurity about like being pretty enough. So I was like, I was like a pudgy kid. And I was like, I can't be an actor. And then also like the kids who were actors, like I'm imagining a white girl with blonde hair and a ponytail with a perfect curl who like owns each house. And like you walk in and it's like, everyone be nice to Madison. She runs things around here. Now I've made that up in my head. That's my story. Is that what the vibe is in a house? Like, you got to kind of go in there. You got to get in close. Again, a la prison. Who's the top dog? Make sure that you're on their team.
Well, yeah. So for a while, one of my roommate was a girl, Jessica from Texas. Oh, and she,
Jessica from Texas. Yeah, of course.
I remember I was just like, we got in a huge argument one day for some reason. I mean, teenage girl sharing a room, and it was something to do with thongs. Because I didn't even know what a thong was, and she only wore thongs.
And Jessica.
I know. And so it was something about that. And then I remember, like, she threw all my clothes all over the room, and then I threw all her thongs, like, down the stairs. Like, you know, it was very, like, dramatic at times when whatever. But, like, I think And back in the day too, I agree with you a little bit in terms of my own self-hatred towards how I looked, and you know, the beauty standards weren't there obviously for people that weren't, you know, maybe blonde hair, blue-eyed at the time, or the Hollister girl, you know, was like my dream.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it bred a lot of competition, and then the manager was also would kind of use that to gain control as well. Like I remember one time she like lined all the girls up and was like, only this person can wear a crop top and no one else should ever be showing their stomach. You know, just stuff like that where you're like, this is crazy, you know? Yeah. And it was moments like that where your intuition as a kid is like, well, that seems weird. But again, it's like when everyone else in the world and the adults in the room are like, this is normal. You're just kind of like, oh, okay. Well, I guess this is normal.
Okay, well, now we have to pivot to therapy. What did you do to keep yourself safe and sane through all of this, right? Like, this is what you're coming up against. And what do you do to kind of... Because you talk about your intuition, but I think something that this industry can really do, especially the younger you are, is tamp down your intuition, right? Yeah. And so the fact that even, you know, again, from the age
of... replace it with what they want.
Exactly. It's right? Like where you're like, this feels wrong, but... This is what we're supposed, like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is the thing I've wanted. So now I'm here. I better agree. You know, so even from the age of 8, when you said, I'm not kissing this boy in front of everybody, it seems like you did have confidence in like your intuition.
Yeah. Weirdly, I think honestly, that's just because this may sound cliche or whatever, but I feel like I was just raised by such strong women. Like my mom was, you know, like a single mom at the time and just kind of doing everything she could to raise these three kids. And, you know, I think I just saw her fortitude, but also my grandmother. So because my mom went back to work, my grandma and grandpa, like when I was little, I'd go to their house and basically be raised by them Monday through Friday. Mm-hmm. And then on the weekends, I would go home. And when my grandmother, she's just the strongest woman. Like she will stand up to anyone. She's so fiery. Like she will speak her mind. And so I think that really helped me a lot. But when she was, similar to the same age I was, well, she was a senior in high school. So probably like 16, she was sent to a Japanese American incarceration camp. Senior year in high school, went to go to Wyoming with her whole family, and they were incarcerated there for 3 to 4 years until the war ended. And after that, the entire, 100,000 Japanese Americans were left with, they were given $25 and a bus ticket to rebuild their lives.
God bless America.
Right? Like, mind you, right before then, our family were sharecroppers, because at the time, Asian Americans couldn't own land. But then the oldest son had just turned 18. So they were like, okay, that's the loophole. He was born here. So now you can buy the farm. They buy the farm. They finally own the farm. Like a month later, war hits, gone, taken everything from them. So really full circle, I do feel like, you know, maybe that just being raised with that kind of mindset of, you know, even if everything is stripped from you, your entire lives, your property, you know, your pets, everything, you know, you can still, as long as you have your family, as long as you have your values and, you know, who you are and good love, I feel like you can still make it out. Okay.
Yeah. Allie, girl, I'm feeling, this is a Super Soul Sunday right now. We done pivoted to Super Soul because I'm feeling this shit.
By the way, I do like how inflation turned 40 acres and a mule into $25 and a bus ticket.
That was America. America flipped the script on you. Good Lord in heaven.
So, okay. I mean, that's a lot. When did you learn about that? About your grandmother's travails? Like, how old?
I was always very interested in it. And so I just asked her a lot of questions growing up. And I remember, I had this little flip camera, like right when the flip cameras came out. And I sat her down. I was like, I'm going to ask you all these questions. Because I wanted to be a journalist when I was younger. And I interviewed her and asked her all these questions. And she also had written down her memoirs before she passed, like on this big box computer. And so I had those as well. So I became very fascinated with all of it. And it's sort of one of my life missions to kind of keep talking about it and keep telling the story of what happened.
Yeah. No, I mean, I asked how old you were because, like, you know, like I learned about the Holocaust at like age 6 or something like that. It's pretty heavy to learn about how
fundamental injustice and that you are part of a group that was aimed to be destroyed.
Right.
At
an early age, that does affect how like you're. And I ask this as in terms of like, well, at what point do you, you know, deal with, do you go to therapy? Have you gone to therapy? Like, is this, cause this seems like between generational trauma and
the Hollywood industrial complex,
right?
It between seems like, the two of those.
Yeah.
It seems like, oh,
yeah, I know it is interesting. I think what's cool about, my family, or at least that the Japanese American community, is there is that resilience, and she was so optimistic about it. And a little bit to where you're like, okay, like it's not okay. But I think that was their way of dealing with it, was just this optimism that, you know, well, that's what happened, but you know, we still made it. And so I guess, I don't know if that's like a little bit of toxic positivity, but I do think that it was nice that she, you know, still tried to have that strength and resilience, I guess. I don't know what I'm saying, but
Have you ever gone to therapy?
Ever go? Yes.
Uh-huh. Since when?
Yeah. It's in my 20s, okay. I would say. Yeah. I went through a pretty long period of anxiety and depression, not understanding what it was when I was like probably early 20s. Cause I think spending my teenage years here, obviously I was just so excited. And then when the dust settles, when you're in your 20s, I feel like that's when my body just physically broke down and I didn't understand because I was having like fainting spells. I was having like panic attacks and I didn't understand what it was. And I think a lot of that also was just the buildup of the industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Because I think it kind of all that auditioning of you are not important, that kind of feeling of nothing. The roles that you're going to do are not important and you're there to kind of service the lead character. I feel like I took that very literally into my real life of that Allie as a person is not important. So I would literally like walk behind people. Mm. I would, you know, not speak up. I mean, I was already shy, but I think it just really like pushed forward more of the people pleasing, more of the, you are not important. This is not about you. Yeah. This is about everyone else and making everyone else happy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this was, you know, this is something when we talked to Tyrell Williams, who was also started out acting as a kid and like his brothers are also actors, and just talked about too, how like he was always a person who played, you know, he was going in for the black funny friend and the extent to which that started to shape what he thought he was as an actual person of like, this is what I have to offer. And so what you're saying really reminds me of that. And it's also, again, and I say this too, as someone, I wanted to act so bad as a kid.
Yeah.
But it's funny because in a way I was shy. So like I would do a stuff in the house and then when I was around people, I'd be like, no.
Yeah, me too.
So I was like, so I wouldn't, but then, so there's a little bit of that because my mom, like she encouraged me a little bit, but then I would get scared and I would pull back. So she was like, okay. But then it was also this sense of like, when it came to really doing it, where she was like, I have a job. I can't take you to audition. Like the audition and the work of it all was not possible, right? To just like stop what I was doing and do that. And so I always used to feel like, oh, I started too late and I missed these chances. But when I talk, you know, when I hear kind of your story or people, I was like, I actually think it was probably better for me that it came later in my life because I definitely was not a kid who would have had the strength to say no. I wanted to be liked too bad and I was too afraid of adults to ever push back that maybe I did have to wait until I was grown and had some other options and experiences so that I could move through this with a little less manipulation. You know what I mean?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I look back on all the shit, the auditions, and I'm like, it pains me to look back at my younger self and say, oh my gosh, like I really did some stuff that I obviously was put in this situation of you're put in this room and they're telling you to do this and that. And what are you going to do? Say no? Like, you know, and I think it just breeds that people pleasing because as kids, you want to please the adults around you. You want to get like the A+, you know, I really looked at it as when I was doing those things, I was crushing it. I was passing the test of life. You know, I was like, I got an A+ today when they asked me to do that Asian accent and I nailed it. And I made them laugh and I really prided myself. I thought I would only ever do comedy because my self-confidence was built around making the adults in the room laugh and pleasing them and doing a good job and them saying, great job, Allie. And that's why I get really sensitive when I see these kid actors and they're getting so much praise all the time of, cause there's some kids that blow my mind. They're so genius. They can memorize lines and they can tell jokes like no other. And I'm always like, and the adults are like, great job, great job. And I'm like, it's scary to watch. Like, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
I want to answer at least one question, but before we take a break, what was the, like, how long did it take you in therapy to kind of like unravel this stuff?
Well, I'm still working through it. But I definitely think probably all of my 20s, once I started, it was just crazy. All the things that kind of unlocked, even that Asian princess story, I had just kind of repressed it. And then one day it came out because we're talking about when I was like, you know, the inner child stuff of when you're 7 or 8 years old is kind of the prime time. So I would say all my 20s and then 30s started to just really be a beautiful time for me. Like I'm loving my 30s, mainly because finding community and finding, you know, the conversation moving forward. You don't feel like you're gaslit anymore.
Yes. You don't feel crazy anymore. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Once you have someone who can say like, did we see the same thing?
Right.
I'm not crazy, right? And they're like, no, you're not crazy. And you're like, thank God.
Or just not even just you're not crazy, but I felt like it was like, I can say it out loud, and not every white person in the room's butthole clenches up immediately. Yeah, like a lot of I went to private school in the Upper East Side, so a lot of it was like Manhattan, Upper East Side of Manhattan, where it was like, I felt it and I knew it, but there was no one to say it to. And if you said it out loud, it was like, you know, don't do that. And we're not that, or we don't see color, or like that was a kind of the option.
In this house, we don't see color.
Exactly. And you're just like, well, that's actually worse. And so, it was like, so it was just interesting. And I think a big part too of like, I think stand up for me was also like a place to just say stuff, right? Like a place to get up and say the stuff that you can't say in the daily conversation. But I think especially in the last 10 years or so, but really in the last five, the conversation has moved. And now you can have a conversation with somebody. Like I can literally talk to my friends and I'm like, you know, white people ain't shit. And it'll be like, to my closest white, to my closest white. And she's like, I'm aware. And that's a beautiful thing in a way. That's healing. That's cleansing.
Just the acknowledgement.
The acknowledgement.
Just the acknowledgement. Because I remember
it's hyperbole. I'm being ridiculous, but I'm almost like, I almost say that kind of, it is a reaction to the kid and the teen who couldn't say anything. You see what I'm saying? So I'll say like a bigger, it's like, of course I don't mean that, but it's also like for someone who wasn't allowed to say, this is fucked up.
Yeah. Yes. And I remember even in my 20s when I would say, well, because, you know, my career was not doing well at all and I just could never figure it out. And I remember I would say that to people and they're like, you just need to work harder. That was what I was getting. And then I became the crazy kid that's like, I'm doing everything and now I'm run ragged and I'm still not making any traction and you just feel crazy.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
All right. I feel like we're in a good place.
Yeah,
why don't we take a quick break and then we're going to come back and answer your advice questions.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
We're back with Ally Mackie here to help you handle your scandal, honey. Ally has done the work, okay? She has survived a Santa Clarita condo with a green carpet and lived to tell the tale.
In a movie, by the way, you would have flashes of a green carpet and you would suddenly have like a panic attack and you would not know what's going on. And then it would unravel throughout the episode or throughout the movie or whatever it is. What does the green carpet signify?
Right, right.
I mean, you guys are just basically writing the movie.
This is Andy's fault. I always tell him, I go, stop putting out all the ideas in the pod. But Ally, there's a lot here because that's insane. Like, because I'm just imagining, so sweet and a little backpack at Jansport. And you get to California, you know, and you're like, mama, I'm going to do it. And then cut to 2 weeks later, you're sending her a fax, a tear-stained fax.
You spelled out in tears, help me.
It's like, oh, God, I've made a mistake.
Oh, man, it's so sad, but it's funny.
We get questions from all over, okay? We get questions from Naomi.
Instagram, Gmail, voicemail, the favorite, Ally, because with the voicemail, you can really hear where the person is emotionally, you know?
Yeah.
And so we encourage a voicemail, and that number is 323-524-7839. There's a 3-minute limit, okay, you guys? And what do I always ask you? I want you to start with the log line. What's the question? What's the issue? your pronouns so I know how to refer to you, my loves. And then you can get into it because...
And I say, here's my suggestion, bullet point it beforehand.
Andy says prepare.
I always say prepare. I just say just bullet point. You don't have to write out what you're going to say. I just say bullet point. That way you know where you're going.
Because sometimes, Allie, you may think, why are these people underlining this so hard? It's because people will really come out here with a long-ass preamble and not get to the question.
No, I get it.
We can't help you help yourself. We can't help you in those situations.
All right. Why don't we do this one?
Okay.
Hey, Naomi, Andy, sexy honored guest and sexy honored audience. I use she, her pronouns, and I broke up with my ex at the end of summer of 2023. The whole time we were dating, he lived with his parents, and we got along, like, super well, his parents and I. And we stayed in touch and have seen each other, like, once or twice since the breakup. We all live in the same city. I feel kind of guilty about this, but I don't think I should, and I would love your input. So my ex was traveling a lot in the second year of our relationship, so I would hang out with his parents when he was gone, and we were able to, like, develop our own relationship and way of interacting. And I like his parents a lot, like, despite the fact that they raised their son like that. And the initial sting of ending, like, a two-year relationship has abated. His parents reached out recently asking to grab drinks. Personally, I like hanging out with them and want to get drinks with them, but on the other hand, I know that if the situation were reversed, I would not be cool with that, with my parents doing that. However, the situation is not reversed, and it's not my relationship to manage. My ex is also really bad at identifying how he's feeling and, like, communicating that, which is why I dumped him. So even if he, like, doesn't like it, would he realize this and say something? Probably not. And is it my responsibility as the person who can metabolize emotions better to take the high road and not hang out with his parents? I don't know. Is it his parents' responsibility to have this conversation with their adult child and, like, negotiate their own relationship with him? Probably. And should I chill out? Maybe. It probably goes without saying as well that his parents are also a little funky emotionally, but they're still really fun to spend time with. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the matter. That's it. Sincerely, me.
Wow.
Interesting.
There's a lot here.
I wish I knew the ages
of the parents.
Her and the parents, because hanging out with parents is feeling a little what, but also
what she started a throuple with them.
What are they doing? What kind of hanging out?
Well, like, especially like, grab drinks is what's like interesting, because I'm like, okay, are these like party people? Are we meeting them at the club? Right. Are we at the bar with the parents? That's why I was like, what's kind of the age but okay, Allie. First thoughts.
Don't look at me. I'm scared.
Okay, well, I'll tell you my first thoughts. I think this is something that the parents should have spoken to their son about before reaching out to you. And I'm assuming, and I would hope that they had done that, right? Because they broke up in summer 2023. It's almost a year, 6 months to a year, that they're saying, hey, would you like to get together? So I assume they also knew, okay, they broke up, things have cooled off. Let's see how that sweet girl's doing.
Can we all agree this is weird? Can we all just like, this is weird? If any of my ex's parents were like, hey, you want to go play foosball? Like, it would be strange. I don't know. I grabbed whatever the first thing is. You want to go shoot hoops.
Yeah,
you want to get a drink. You want to go to an axe throwing
bar. No, it's strange.
Whatever. It's strange. It is strange. It is weird. Okay? Let's just all agree that it's weird for them to do this in the first place.
Sure.
Well, I have one question. Also, did she say how long they were dating for?
It was 2 years. Two-year relationship. And then he was, like, traveling a lot so she would see the parents. Oh, right, because he lived with his parents, right?
Yes.
So to see him would be to go to his parents' house.
But also when
they were traveling, she would go hang out with the parents, I guess. And that's what I'm kind of wondering, because something about this, you know what it is? It feels very early 20s to me. And that's not shade, but it's sort of like that age where it is kind of nice to have, like, parental-like figures who aren't your actual parents. When you're like, I want someone who, like, is older and wiser but doesn't tell me what to do.
Huh.
Right, exactly. Have that kind of extra support system. Because I was going to say, in my family, one of my brothers started dating someone when they were 12, when I was 12. So I grew up with his girlfriend as like sort of a sister, and mm-hmm. she became sort of part of our family. And we're still like, I still consider her a sister, and she's married now, and he's, you know, obviously everyone's, you know, cool. And so I think there is some situation, like you said, and that's because everyone was very young. And right. So like my mom kind of became this like maternal figure for her, and she became like an older sister for me. So it sort of seems more like familial.
Yeah.
But I guess, I don't know, 2 years is long enough.
That feels different, by the way. By the way, that feels different. Having a kind of just like surrogate sister as part of the family versus adult figures that are now like fake parents in this.
I mean, look, I don't think they should be getting together every Friday for movie night. But
no.
If it's like twice a year, catch up and go see a show or something. I don't know what, quite honestly, I don't know what the dynamic is. I don't understand, because going to get a drink.
The energy,
with them.
Listeners, the energy you are feeling from this is that we are all struggling with, again, the strangeness of this. I find the parents doing this, a listener, caller. This is not about you. This is about the parents. I feel like the parents should not have done this in the first place.
Right.
They're doing something, they're breaking a strange boundary.
Right.
That,
she also did say that they were emotionally funky, which I think is a very funny term
for the son. She dumped the son. She dumped their kid. And they're still reaching out, which seems to be an
indictment of their child.
An indictment of their child. Thank you, Naomi.
I know. You're like, wow, nobody likes him, it seems. Because remember, he lives there. So the decision to hang out with her.
So what are they going
to
do? Are they going to tell him? Are they going to be like, we're going out with the Benders? We're going to go play Pinochle with them tonight. And then they're going to hang out with
his ex?
Yeah. Like,
are they
lying?
But this is why I was like, to me, and this is the question of sort of what should you do? First of all, do you feel you really need these friends? And that's an honest question. And that's why he's like, do you really feel it? Because I would maybe give it some more time. Like, be like, hey, you know, text back like, hey, so good, but it still feels weird. You know, be honest. Again, they're the adults in the room, so to speak. You're all adults, but I think you shouldn't be afraid to be honest with them. But the question where you said, you're like, should I manage this or should whatever? I don't think you should at all. It is for the parents of the son they live with. It's on them to talk to their child and say, hey, is this okay for you? This is what we wanted to check in with her. This is whatever. And that's on them to do. And it's not for you to micromanage or negotiate that relationship for those people, because you're not part of that group anymore. You're not part of that group anymore. You broke up with him. So it's not on you whatsoever. So get rid of that part where you feel like you have to manage that situation. But then after that, do you really need to be hanging out with them? Do you really need to be hanging out with them is the question.
That's I think you nailed it, honestly. I agree with you on all points. I mean, somebody's got to set the boundaries. And I think if anyone, it's got to be if anything I learned in therapy, it's about setting boundaries and being very clear. Because I think when it's not clear, and I think a lot of what she's saying is unclear, because maybe no one knows. Yeah. Everyone's just like, I don't know. And so someone's got to set the hard boundary. Like, here's what it is. Here's what it's not is. Here's what I'm comfortable with. Here's what I'm not comfortable with. It's like, are you going to the club or are you going to eat at Red Robin? You know, just catch up once a year. Like, you know, it's two different scenarios.
Exactly.
So,
By the way, here's my Red Robin tip. I don't know if they still do this. I haven't been in a Red Robin in like 4 years. They have you can pick an appetizer thing where you like you pick two or appetizer, you pick three appetizer, whatever. You can do that and just choose all mozzarella sticks and just get a whole big thing
of
mozzarella sticks.
This is what Andy's telling you, okay? You pick three, thing.
You know, because you're supposed to pick two different or three different ones, but you can just pick the same one, and that same one can just be mozzarella sticks.
Now, Allie, can I just remind you that Andrew started this conversation talking about his gastrointestinal upset as a result of too many vegan sandwiches? And he just told everybody to go 3 for 3
well,
on the mozzarella
stick. I don't have mozzarella sticks very often, okay?
But that's all the more reason why if you were to have all three of them, your body wouldn't be prepared.
Well, but is this you when you're groggy from vegan food? Because you're very, like, thinking well and energetic.
Yeah, I would be much, oh, you would be charmed even more. If I hadn't had all those sandwiches last night. Allie, do you have time for one more?
Yes.
You can say no. Because I don't want you people pleasing. I don't want you people pleasing us.
No, this is the most fun I've had today yet.
All right. We have another. Okay, I'm going to give you a choice. We have another parent one. I didn't choose these on theme. But we do have another parent one. We also have... What is this one about?
Oh, about therapy.
About therapy. Which one would
about
you rather
a therapist.
Have?
Maybe about the therapist.
Great.
Okay.
All right. This one comes to us anonymous from Gmail.
Okay. Dear Naomi, Andy, and special guest, that's you, Allie. I adore you guys and get so much out of this podcast. Having you in my ear is a comfort and a delight. Thank you for everything you do. Thank you so much.
I leave in all the compliments.
He does. Andy leaves in the compliments, and I usually feel like douchey for reading them aloud to the guest, but... Here we are. Anyway, I'm looking for advice about how to tell my therapist that I'm upset with her. I've been seeing her for about a year and a half and really connect with her. She got me through a major mental health crisis and helped me usher in an era of improved mood and stability, for which I'm so grateful. Now that I'm no longer in crisis, in quotes, we talk more about the everyday anxiety and depression stuff. One big topic is getting out of my comfort zone. Making room in my life for social connection and new experiences, saying yes to life, etc.
That's right. Yeah, like, yes to life, yes to life, etc.
Whatever.
You got it. In our last session, I was telling her about an upcoming bachelorette trip for my future sister-in-law, my brother's fiance. I said yes to the trip a long time ago, not because it sounded fun, relatable, but because I wanted to show my support and honor the kind gesture of including me. I'm close with my family and believe in the importance of showing up for each other, as much as I sometimes dread showing up when the time comes. Also relatable. Now that the time has come, I was anxious about not knowing anyone, doing lots of group activities, wearing themed outfits, spending too much money. My sister-in-law's friends all seemed to be wealthy and beautiful. I was feeling self-conscious about how I'd fit in, but my mindset was, this is happening and I'm going to make the best of it. I was shocked when my therapist winced and asked if it was too late to get out of it. She couldn't believe I'd agreed to this. I thought for sure that she was going to give me a gold star and congratulate me for being so brave. But she said it sounded awful and expressed her concern about how I'd get through it. She even suggested contacting the airline to see if I could still get my money back if I canceled the flight. I was supposed to be leaving the next day. Basically, she thought I'd sacrifice my own needs to please other people. I was positive that it was too late to back out. Okay, this is a long one. Okay, I'm still in it. She was so worried for me that my anxiety got even worse heading into the trip. At the airport, before Ubering to the Airbnb, I had to sit down for a while to breathe and push through the waves of panic, thinking, why the hell am I here? Even my therapist thinks I can't do this. Once I got there, I had a lovely time. Okay. Socially, it was a lot for me at times, but the girls were warm and inclusive. Some of them didn't know anyone else either. Ultimately, I'm so glad I went. Hmm. If I had bailed at the last minute, I think I would have hurt my sister-in-law's feelings and damaged our relationship. I know I can tell all of this to my therapist, and I will, but there's a part of me now that doesn't have the same trust or confidence in her opinion. If I had mentioned it earlier, I probably would have taken her reaction as permission to back out and missed out on a positive experience. My question can be boiled down to this. Have you ever had a major disagreement with your therapist, and how did you handle it? Also, am I tripping for kind of blaming her for my mini panic attack? Love you. Thanks for reading.
Wow, the beginning, middle, and end.
Ooh, you know what, though? This is someone who has a gift. That's a writer. That's someone who is a storyteller. That's someone who can really bring you into their world. And I thank you. And Allie, as someone who, you know, you said you've been in therapy a while now. I don't know if it's been with the same person the whole time. Has it?
No, it has not.
Okay, so have you had these moments with a therapist where you said, I don't know if I trust your opinion?
Well, okay, yeah, so... I feel like it gets weird when it starts to blur over into a therapist being more of like a friend. Because I did have a therapist before during the pandemic that we would just laugh and then I would talk about my stuff, but then she would instantly go into how that applies to her family. And start talking shit about her family and be like, that reminds me of my cousin, you know, Jenny, who will talk during Thanksgiving. And I was like, I don't know if this is helping me because I'm having a great time, because then I would start giving her advice and I'd be like, well, she can't do that to you. Like, that's so rude. So I feel like, again, boundaries. So I ended up leaving her and going somewhere else just because I was like, I feel like, are therapists supposed to tell you exactly what to do? Make the decision?
This is interesting because I am with a therapist right now who is basically just this Freudian mirror. And every time I ask her for any kind of advice, she just goes, well, why do you want me to tell you? You know, she just asked the question. She makes me, and I'm like, because you are my interlocutor. Or I'm like, she's like, well, why do you make a joke? Like, why do you think it's important for me to be entertained and not bored? I'm like, because you're sitting here across me. And if I'm talking and you're like struggling to like not yawn, that bums me out. So that's why, okay? And that's why I will change what I'm talking about. We don't have to talk about dystopia or COVID or whatever. We could talk about something else. There's plenty of anxieties up here that we can talk about, okay? Right. So I can pivot at whatever point. But she will never give me advice. She will never give me anything. She just constantly is pushing back. And I find that end of it,
yeah, like, it's frustrating too.
Yes. Yeah. I needed that early on in therapy.
Right. You needed to learn what you were feeling and how to explain it. So you needed someone asking you questions back.
But now we're at a point where I'm just like, I don't know how to live in this world. And so just give me some coping mechanisms. Yeah.
Tell me what to do. Tell me, please help me.
Yeah. I feel like that's like so far the other direction. Because I feel like now I have someone that is kind of a sweet spot in the middle where she doesn't make my decisions for me, but she gives really great examples or just she kind of suggestions.
Right.
But I think the problem with that, with this one, is that she was kind of judging her and all her friends. She was like, this sounds terrible. Like,
yes.
Why would you go?
Especially the day before the trip.
Well, this is the thing.
That's my problem.
This is what struck me, which is if you are going to be a therapist who gives advice, what's going to happen on the other end is if they don't want that advice or don't take that advice, or it turns out that the advice was wrong. Now you lose the trust of your client.
Right. Right. Right.
And all credibility. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But here's my thing though. I think what you're saying, which is like, have you ever had a major disagreement? How do you handle it? Am I tripping for blaming her? First of all, I have. Because quite honestly to me, when I start arguing with my therapist, it's giving Goodwill Hunting. Let's get into it. This is what you trained for, bitch. I'm turning the lens on you. So like, I say get into it. With a person you've been seeing for a year and a half and that was helpful to you in a mental health crisis. Now, I just had a therapist recently who like fucked up on some medication with me. And I was like, no, we're done. Because I felt like, you can't be out here misprescribing me and fucking me up. And I hadn't seen her long enough to feel like, oh, we're in something. But after a year and a half, someone who has helped you, I think this, and you were like, and you said you were like, I'm not in crisis anymore. And now we're kind of dealing with the day-to-day stuff and getting out of my comfort zone. I would imagine that one way to get out of your comfort zone is to talk honestly with somebody who you're close to about how they disappointed you and or hurt you. This is a part of the work. And that doesn't mean you stay with this therapist forever. But I think a big part of therapy is a safe place to feel your feelings in their entirety. And those feelings can include and should include, I don't like what you said to me, or I don't like how you said it to me, or I don't like, because here's the thing. Because we also have to acknowledge too what our therapist sees of us, depending, right, is that hour a week, right? Or is the session in and of itself? So I think part of why you want to, I want you to confront her and say like, hey, you telling me not to go the day before I was going really stressed me out. And I felt like because I had already committed, it would have been better for me if you had helped me get excited about it as opposed to making me feel like I shouldn't have done it. And saying like, I actually had a good time. So I think you have that conversation and then you have to be open to your therapist being, hopefully if this is the kind of person they are, where they're like, well, hey, every time you and I sit here, every week you talk about how afraid you are of everything. So when you told me about this party, I thought this sounds like too much at once. Because that could also be part of it, right? Because there's one thing to say, get out of your comfort zone, I'm going to go to somebody's party for an afternoon. And another to say, I'm traveling to be with a group of women I've never met for 4 days. And that is part of the conversation you have with your therapist. You guys sort this out. Because she may, because what this can also show her is that, like, you've actually grown more than she thought. You're actually in a new phase that maybe she didn't know you were in, because the hour you see each other a week is the place where you kind of, for lack of a better term, aren't your best. At least for me. I'm like, I don't go to therapy to be good. I go to therapy to bring the dark so we can get unpack this shit. I go, bitch, I got the tote. Let's unpack it.
Allie, you ever go to a bachelorette weekend with a bunch of strangers?
Not lately, but now
you have been to one?
Bachelorette week. Probably at some point. I don't know if it's bachelorette, but maybe like a birthday or something.
Yeah.
But now I know what to do if this happens to me. You've just helped me so much in so many fields. But I agree. Like, I think resentment, like, there's something about why would we be scared to bring up to our therapist something about therapists? If we don't, it's just going to breed this resentment, and that it's going to just make everything more toxic and hard down the line.
Yeah. And I think it's the best way. Like, you bring it up. And again, their response will tell you if this is your therapist or not, because it is possible that now that you are no longer in the crisis, this person may not be the best person for your day-to-day anymore, right? You know what I mean? Like, some people are better at, like, the acute situation, and then other people are better for, like, okay, I'm all about saying yes to life, et cetera, as you wrote. And you need a
that should be
vibe.
On a piece of driftwood at TJ Maxx that you can get.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes to life, comma, et cetera.
Et cetera.
Because I think that's part of it. Because I'm like, but I think you guys have to have the conversation, because you're never going to regain the trust if you just bite your tongue. You're just going to stay mad and being like side eye the whole time.
By the way, I meant Marshalls. 100%. Not TJ Maxx.
No, it could be a TJ Maxx as well.
I thought that it totally could
or
be.
Or Home Goods or Joann's Fabric.
I love all of those stores.
They're all places where you can get driftwood with an inspirational saying.
Naomi, you're so good at giving advice.
You know, Allie, that's so sweet of you to say, because I am a whole mess, okay? I am currently braless. And when we are done, I will go back to bed. And that's, you know, that's life too. That's life too.
But your honesty is very endearing. We love that about you. Me, I'm like, I don't think I should give advice to anyone.
Well, this is the last question I wanted to ask you, which was, at what point in your life did you start to push back against not just therapists, but other people?
Right. The people pleasing.
At what age?
I mean, clearly when I was eight, I did that.
So it was definitely like, it was like, that's a primal kind
okay.
of like,
hey, that's a primal
memory.
That's a primal animal.
That's a primal that's animal a primal for you. Animal. It was your 8-year-old self.
I think I keep bringing that back into the room, but I think I always have it in me. I think it's just been dampened down a lot. So a lot of it was just kind of making that my instinct to jump on again. Because I really do think I have this kind of like, I don't know, something inside me that will always have that intuition of when something's wrong or when I feel like I need to stand up for something. I think a lot of it was just not, I think it was just the formative moment of adults in the room at a young age saying, no, your intuition's wrong. This is right. This is right. Mm-hmm. So I think now my 30s has been about finding again that, no, your intuition was right the whole time and you should stand up. And so I think I don't know. It's kind of confusing. I'm confusing myself, but I think I've always had it in me to kind of stand up for myself. I think I just got really confused along the way. And that's where I think the teenage years really can mess it up for you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh,
so
my goodness.
Chris O'Dowd's eating too many brownies at Crafty. You can say, hey, leave some brownies for the rest of us.
Yeah, you tell him. You tell him out there.
I will tell him.
You tell Chris O'Dowd, goddammit.
He's such a lovely person, but I'm going to let him have it.
I didn't realize I was eating too many brownies.
Nope, no accent work, Andy. Allie. This was a damn delight and a dream. Yeah. We are such a fan of you. I had so many questions about shortcomings, but I'll just have to bring you back for another conversation about all of that.
Yeah,
cool. Oh,
sure of that.
We loved it, and I had so many thoughts. But then I also had thoughts about your character, where I was like, I don't know. I felt like she handle it the best way, but that's also good when you watch a movie and you like start talking afterwards and they're like,
yes,
into it, you know. Justin Min said, no, I don't want to do the podcast, but I'm going to get him because I have thoughts. Okay.
To be fair, his people said no.
His people.
We have no idea.
But I was like, we got to unpack. Cause I have so many things, but like, also we got so into the hype house.
I know.
Condo in Santa Clarita, but like, you are just so good in everything you're in. And like,
you guys are
a damn delight. And I knew when I saw we had a mutual friend in the beautiful Colton, I was like, okay, Ali's got to be good people. But You just really gave me a reason to get out of bed this morning, and I just really appreciate you for that.
You too, as well. Just, can we be friends? Because, yeah, man,
We're going to do Unisom. We're going to do quarter Unisom and take naps.
Yes. Napping friends are my favorite.
All right. We'll see you all next time.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.